Hello, and welcome to our program, Senior Living, brought to you by OWL Radio and the Low Vision Resource Center. I'm Chrissy Mernon. During this next half hour, I'm reading articles from the AARP Bulletin here on OWL Radio, and this is Your Health. A mini stroke is a big deal, despite the name. The effects of a TIA may be temporary, but the implications are often serious. Late on the afternoon of March 19, 2015, Dawn Turnage sat down with her smartphone for a video chat with her toddler niece, Naomi. Suddenly, the child said, "Titi," Naomi's name for her, "why are you making funny faces at me?" Naomi's mother, a physician assistant, grabbed the phone, took one look at her sister's drooping face, and told her to call an ambulance. But Turnage stalled. Eventually, she agreed to go to an urgent care clinic where she was wrongly diagnosed with Bell's palsy, a neurological disorder. Turnage's sister wouldn't relent, and she persuaded someone at urgent care to call an ambulance. Emergency physicians ran tests, including a computerized tomography, CT scan, and an MRI, and concluded that Turnage, then 45, had experienced a transient ischemic attack, better known as a TIA or mini stroke, due to a short-term blood blockage to the brain that typically resolves itself within 24 hours. She'd had several headaches and even a blackout in recent days without understanding what was going on. The workup revealed a blood clot in a neck artery that had blocked blood flow to her brain until it cleared on its own, she says. Turnage knows she was fortunate. If the clot hadn't cleared, the delay might have meant brain damage and disability, even death. By hesitating to get to a hospital's emergency department, I really put myself at risk, she says. Early warning signs. A TIA may be temporary, but nearly one in five people who have one go on to have a stroke in the next 90 days, and half of those strokes occur within 48 hours of the TIA. Most TIAs are actually small strokes, says Andrew Budson, MD, Chief of Behavioral Neurology for the VA Boston Healthcare System. It's just that the damage to the brain is small enough that the symptoms go away. TIAs can result from a brief blockage of blood to the brain, which may be caused by a clot. TIA symptoms, like those of a stroke, often affect one side of the body. They include a drooping face, slurred speech, dizziness, and blurred or lost vision. Think of the acronym FAST: face drooping, arm weakness, speech difficulty, time to call 911. First line of defense. Usually, the first test given to determine a TIA are a CT scan and an MRI of the brain and blood vessels to look for brain damage or other causes of the symptoms. An MRI is especially important as it can show damage too small to appear on a CT scan, experts say. Sometimes a doctor will also perform an echocardiogram to look for abnormalities in the heart and blood vessels that might account for symptoms. Lisa Wolf, now 64, a retired finance manager who lives in Holly Springs, North Carolina, experienced a TIA on Thanksgiving 2003 with symptoms that included sudden flashing visual disturbances, left side weakness, and significant speech difficulty, she recalls. I remember feeling frustrated at not being able to communicate. The symptoms resolved, so the neurologist who examined Wolf at the hospital diagnosed a TIA, but the doctor wanted to know what had caused it. An echocardiogram revealed a patent formalin ovale, or PFO, a hole between the upper chambers of the heart. Everyone is born with a foramen ovale. It is patent if it doesn't close on its own within several months after birth. This happens in about one in four babies. In a few individuals, a stroke can occur if a clot moves through the opening and reaches the brain. Wolf had surgery to close the hole and has since been fine. Other conditions can mimic a TIA, which is why patients need a full medical evaluation. Among them, migraine, epilepsy, and hypoglycemia, low blood sugar. According to Robert Brown, Jr., MD, a neurologist at the Mayo Clinic, a migraine-related aura or a localized seizure in an area of the brain can cause TIA-like symptoms, he says. Evaluate your risk. The diagnosis of TIA is largely based on the symptoms and exam, meaning doctors often make this diagnosis even if the tests are normal, says Tracy Madsen, MD, Associate Professor of Emergency Medicine and Epidemiology at Brown University. If someone's symptoms are consistent with TIA and we don't find an alternative cause, we treat it as a TIA, she says. You still need to assess your risk to prevent a future stroke. To assess your overall risk, your doctor likely will look at factors including high blood pressure, diabetes, heart disease, especially atrial fibrillation, which is an irregular heartbeat, high cholesterol, obesity, and sickle cell disease. Certain behaviors also increase risks, such as smoking, a diet high in saturated fat, and a sedentary lifestyle. Doctors use a set of criteria to help evaluate a patient's risk. Each year, more than 795,000 Americans have a stroke, which is among the leading causes of death in this country. Women have a higher risk than men, according to the American Stroke Association, and Black women, such as Turnage, are in greater danger than white women. Many strokes are preventable by knowing your risk factors and working with the clinician to treat them, Brown says, urging patients to take medication as prescribed. Exercise, drink alcohol only in moderation, and eat a healthy diet low in salt and fat and rich in fruits and vegetables, fish, nuts, and whole grains. Turnage, now 52, takes daily aspirin and blood pressure medication, monitors calories, avoids red meat and salt, and works out at a gym 3 times a week. She's lost 62 pounds since her TIA. I am painfully aware that Black women such as myself are at much higher risk for stroke than other populations, Turnage says. So I feel it's important that we know our numbers, blood pressure and cholesterol, manage our stress, and seek medical care, she says. We need to put ourselves first, she stresses. Having a TIA was a very scary experience, and I was blessed that it didn't turn into something worse. How can you tell that it's a TIA? You can't. TIA symptoms are the same as those of a stroke. Only a health professional can make that call, experts say. If the symptoms go away, don't assume everything is fine. It's human nature to think this must not be a problem, but it may be serious, Brown says. Fast action matters. Call 911 immediately. Don't waste time searching your symptoms on the internet. Don't call your primary care physician. It may be 6 hours before they can call you back, says Louise McCullough, MD, a neurologist at the University of Texas Health Science Center in Houston. Also, don't wait for a family member to come home and give you a ride to the emergency room, she urges. Echoes Errol Green, MD, an emergency physician. It is better to spend time in the emergency department being evaluated, even if it turns out not to be a TIA or stroke. The next article from AARP Bulletin, Fraud Watch, Get Back What's Yours. Recovering what you lost to scammers is a long shot, but that's starting to change. Cy Smith, 53, a financial analyst from San Francisco, lost $1.2 million in a fast-moving cryptocurrency investment scam in 2021. It was a living nightmare, he says. My life savings, my daughter's education fund, it was all gone in 5 weeks. But in January, Smith, we changed his name at his request, wept tears of joy in a California courtroom when a judge ordered the return of $110,000 of the stolen money. I was a lucky one, Smith acknowledges. Getting money back from criminals is rare, but new efforts by law enforcement officials, banks, payment apps, and gift card companies are clawing back some of the funds lost in a wide variety of scams. Smith recovered money thanks to Santa Clara County Deputy District Attorney Aaron West's crusade to track, freeze, and seize stolen cybercurrency as it flows to overseas criminal gangs through online trading exchanges. All of this makes reporting fraud, something that nearly half of those targeted failed to do, more important than ever. The best thing you can do for yourself and future victims is to report as soon as possible, West says. Your information could launch or further an investigation, trigger warnings to protect others, or even help you recover money. Here's the latest on efforts to recover scammed money. Cryptocurrency. Since last December, West's team has seized more than $2.5 million for California victims of cryptocurrency investment scams in which victims were lured into investing over and over again. The Crypto Coalition, a nationwide law enforcement network started by West in the fall of 2022, has more than 1,000 members in 40 states who are deploying the same investigative techniques and laws to recover funds. Reporting tip: report crypto scams to the FBI's Internet Crime Complaint Center and to your local police department. Peer-to-peer apps. Starting June 30th, the more than 2,000 U.S. banks that provide customers with Zelle, the nation's largest dollar volume peer-to-peer P2P payment service, have been investigating and recovering money lost to scammers. This is a massive change, says Ben Chance, Chief Fraud Risk Management Officer for Early Warning Services, the network owner and operator for Zelle. Previously, scam victims could recover money lost in unauthorized Zelle transactions only when a criminal took over an account. This rule change even covers transactions authorized by users if you have fallen for a certain type of imposter scam, Chance says. The scammer has to be impersonating a government agency like the IRS or Social Security Administration, a financial institution like a bank, or a service provider like a utility company. Last fall, Congress opened an investigation into Zelle's fraud recovery policies, saying scammers used the service to steal $441 million from users in 2021. Reporting tips. If you paid scammers by using Zelle, you can report it to the bank or credit union where you have your Zelle account up to 120 days after an incident. But sooner is better for bank investigators. The nation's two other largest P2P apps, Venmo and Cash App, recommend users contact customer service if they've been scammed. But they say most of the time, payments to scammers cannot be canceled. Gift cards. Gift card companies may be able to recover some or all of the money sent to scammers via gift card numbers if you act quickly, says Martha Weaver, spokesperson for the Retail Gift Card Association. With a receipt and swift reporting, funds or partial funds can be recouped, she says. The sooner you take action, the more likely you are to minimize the damage and protect yourself from further financial harm. Reporting tip. There should be a 1-800 number on the back of the card. Call that number, Weaver says. Some gift card issuers may have specific procedures for handling fraud claims. Follow their instructions. If there is not a toll-free number on the card, go to the website and contact customer service. Don't fall for the recovery scam. Asset recovery scammers hit you when you're down using sucker list of recent victims that fraudsters buy and sell among themselves. The crooks pose as consumer advocates or government agents, and they promise they'll get your lost money back. The con. Recovery scammers describe the ruse that's already cost you money, then offer to recover the funds for a fee up front. Some ask for bank account or credit card information. Others send a check for too much money and ask you to return the extra amount. By the time you learn the check is fake, your money is gone. In one Florida case, recovery scammers going by the name Consumer Collection Advocates bilked older people out of $2.8 million. How to steer clear. Don't trust offers to recover scam money for a fee or any that require financial information. And never pay in advance to get a refund, the Federal Trade Commission advises. The next article from AARP Bulletin, Your Life, A Watchful Eye and a Willing Ear. Not all aging loved ones need medical help. Enter the care companion. After my father died 11 years ago, my mother became fiercely independent. Her social calendar was full, book club, choir practices, and film group meetings, and her memory remained sharp for years. She could recall incidents from my childhood that I had long forgotten. Dementia changed all that. 3 years ago, my mother, Joanna, started to get into car accidents, not severe, but concerning. One night, she forgot how to get home. I noticed her struggling to recall the names of friends and relatives. She often couldn't remember where the utensils were kept in her kitchen. My family and I knew she needed help, but we didn't want to move her from her home in the Michigan neighborhood she adored, and she was in relatively good physical health. She didn't need a home health aide. She needed someone who could just spend time with her. A different type of care. Such an arrangement is called companion care, a solution for people in my mother's situation. They need some supervision, but not medical care, as well as help with tasks such as cooking and transportation, but not feeding or dressing. And they crave companionship. We've got loved ones who are sitting alone and not having conversations and not really staying as much engaged in life or feeling as relevant, says Sherry Snelling, a gerontologist and spokesperson for Comfort Keepers, an in-home care agency. Finding someone to do this work often requires going through different channels, from those to find home health aides. The need is great, but I don't think we have great models for finding companionship care because it does not fit our traditional home care models or home health models, says Christina Irving, Client Services Director with the Family Caregiver Alliance. She suggests reaching out to senior and community centers, nursing schools, or students in psychology or social work programs at local colleges. A geriatric care manager can also help. Locate one in your area at aginglifecare.org. Also helping to fill this void are online registries that connect families with various types of in-home workers, also including child care providers, pet sitters, and house cleaners. They include care.com, comfort keepers, and care links. One benefit is that they screen workers, but with some agencies, rates may be higher because the service will take a cut. The benefit of companionship. I found one care companion through Nextdoor, the popular neighborhood network app. She was a kind, compassionate widow who was eager to spend a few hours a week helping my mom. Initially skeptical, my mother was quickly won over and enjoyed being taken on errands such as grocery shopping that she used to handle herself. Later, we hired a second care companion, and my mother had a similar positive reaction. She's my new best friend. The next article from AARP Bulletin, Your AARP, Where We Stand, by Joanne Jenkins, CEO. The Power of Purpose. Older Americans show how a mission transforms us. It's been said that the two most important days of your life are the day you are born and the day you find out why. Finding our purpose is what guides us and gives our life meaning. In a coming-out AARP documentary, The Hidden Power of Purpose, viewers will hear from some of the nation's leading behavioral scientists about the benefits of finding a purpose in life, that those who do can live longer, healthier, and happier lives. When you are living a life of purpose, neurosurgeon Sanjay Gupta says in the film, you are signaling to your body to make sure that your immune system is functioning at its best. Renowned author and alternative medicine advocate Deepak Chopra adds that technology is now able to back the belief that mind and body are inseparable aspects of our existence. The documentary focuses on the stories of four Americans over age 50 who have overcome tremendous life challenges to pursue their passion for service. During October, the documentary will have its world premiere at the Heartland International Film Festival, followed by screenings at the Hot Springs Documentary Film Festival, Newport Beach Film Festival, and Downtown LA Film Festival. For the past 7 years, AARP has been celebrating the unique contributions of adults 50 and older who have found their purpose and are pursuing their passion to make a difference in the world. This month, we're announcing this year's AARP Purpose Prize winners. In the October-November issue of AARP the magazine, you will get to meet this extraordinary group of people who are using their knowledge and life experience to solve some of the most challenging social problems of our time. The AARP Purpose Prize celebrates older people who use their life experience to create social change. This prestigious annual award illuminates a new vision of aging by honoring extraordinary individuals who are fulfilling their life's purpose through service to others. This year's Purpose Prize honorees, each of whom founded a nonprofit, were chosen because of the impact of their work, their innovative approaches to helping others, and the power of their personal stories. Each AARP Purpose Prize winner will receive a $50,000 award for his or her organization, and 10 fellows will receive $10,000 for their organizations. Winners and fellows also receive a year of technical support for their organizations. AARP will recognize one of the winners with the AARP Inspire Award. The public can vote on which of the five winners inspires them the most. The Inspire Award winner's organization will receive an additional $10,000. During these trying times, we are honored to recognize the extraordinary work of these age 50-plus Americans. Our Purpose Prize winners and fellows are shining examples of a simple yet profound truth. When we find our purpose, that reason to get up and get going every day, we give meaning to our lives and also make the world a better place for everyone. AARP is proud to celebrate the power of purpose in the lives of older people, It's just part of our mission to reframe how society looks at aging and give all Americans the freedom to choose how they live as they age. And now we have an article from AARP, the magazine, Healthy You, Learning to Live with Tinnitus. Nearly one in four people over age 65 are plagued by phantom sound. Here are expert tips for managing this complex condition. In the spring of 2019, Dan Torpy, 59, a forensic accountant in Dallas, was recovering from a sinus infection when he started hearing a high-pitched sound, like a toned-down dentist drill. I went to an urgent care doctor who checked my hearing and said, "You're fine, it will go away," Torpy recalls. It didn't. 7 months later, he saw an ear, nose, and throat specialist, ENT, who told Torpy that he had tinnitus, the perception of sound in the absence of an external source. The ENT said there was no cure, but suggested he reduce his caffeine intake. Then Torpy went to an audiologist. The audiologist told him that he just had to live with it, he says. "I felt so alone. There's the initial shock that the ringing in your ears isn't going to go away. And then there's the realization that most doctors don't have a clue about how to treat it." Torpy's experience is all too common. In a survey of 230 people with tinnitus published in 2018, researchers at the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign found that 80% had been informed by a healthcare provider that there's nothing they can do about tinnitus. Patients who come to our clinic are scared by the thought of dealing with this sound without help for the rest of their lives, says Lori Zatelli, a clinical audiologist at the UPMC Eye and Ear Institute in Pittsburgh. Why some of us hear things that aren't there. Tinnitus affects at least 25 million American adults, and the prevalence of the condition increases dramatically with age. A recent international JAMA neurology study showed that tinnitus impacts 24% of people 65 and older and 14% of 45 to 64-year-olds. By the time they're 50 or 60, many people have been exposed to years of loud noise which damages the inner ear, causing hearing loss, notes Bradley Kesser, MD, a professor of otolaryngology at the University of Virginia School of Medicine. While everyone with hearing loss doesn't get tinnitus, most people with tinnitus have hearing loss. Anyone can get tinnitus, but people with noisy jobs, from construction workers to military personnel to musicians, are especially affected. For a condition so common, it's remarkably misunderstood. Even ringing in the ears, the customary description, doesn't capture everyone's experience. Tinnitus can sound like buzzing, whistling, chirping, humming, hissing, squealing, wailing, or clicking. For some, it ebbs and flows, or it disappears and then returns, especially during times of stress. Scientists can't explain the individual variations, but research is starting to point to why tinnitus happens and what to do about it. A minority of those with the condition have a treatable issue, like an ear infection or earwax buildup. Once those issues are addressed, the tinnitus often goes away. It's not your brain. It's in your brain, not your ears. Doctors usually can't hear or directly measure your tinnitus. The reason? While ear damage plays a causal role, the sound comes from the brain. People over 60 usually have high-frequency hearing loss, and tinnitus is typically a high-frequency sound. So one theory is that the brain may be trying to fill in the sound that's missing from the ears, Kesser observes. Research at the University of Illinois Auditory Cognitive Neuroscience Lab indicates that non-auditory parts of the brain are involved too. Our fMRI scans of tinnitus patients show that the networks that process attention and emotion are different in these people than in those without the condition. So these non-auditory networks are probably contributing to the tinnitus as well, says Fatima Hussein, the principal investigator at the lab. The spectrum of what people with tinnitus complain about, difficulty concentrating and sleeping, and increased sensitivity to normal environmental sounds, is mirrored in our brain imaging. Getting used to it. The goal of most scientifically validated tinnitus treatments is habituation. Reaching a point where the sound no longer bothers you or harms your quality of life. We habituate to irritants all the time, Kesser says. For instance, a tag in your shirt might bother you when you first put it on, but an hour later, you don't notice it. Kesser adds that the first step in managing tinnitus may be sound therapy, bringing in external noise, such as that from a fan or TV, to mask the tinnitus. For people with hearing loss, hearing aids may be more effective. They bring in a little external background noise and can drown out the internal tinnitus, Kesser points out. For those who are anxious, depressed, or having trouble sleeping, antidepressants can help, as can relaxation techniques such as yoga and meditation, he says. Another method, called tinnitus retraining therapy, combines sound therapy, in which earbuds deliver a low level of sound to reduce the auditory impact of the tinnitus, with counseling to help patients view it as an unimportant sound. The American Tinnitus Association, ATA, can help you find an experienced practitioner. Healthy habits, including a nutritious diet and regular exercise, may also help with tinnitus, according to the ATA, since they can reduce blood pressure and weight and bolster energy and well-being. Most people with tinnitus ultimately use a variety of techniques to create an approach that works for them, says San Diego resident Loretta Marsh, 70, who has had the condition for 22 years and is a longtime ATA volunteer. I always suggest that newly diagnosed patients join a support group. Being around other people who have tinnitus can give you hope and help you see you're not alone. Don't give up. Maintaining hope is vital. Paul D'Arezzo, 70, a retired emergency room doctor in Grand Junction, Colorado, began hearing a shrill tone in his left ear 5 years ago. He was tormented by his tinnitus to such a degree that he had suicidal feelings. One of the things that helped me was writing 50 questions on index cards, like, what am I going to do today if I start feeling overwhelmed by tinnitus? And going through them every morning, he says. To this day, every time I start paying attention to the sound, I remind myself, just don't go there. Then I distract myself. Torpy took a stress reduction course, and the ATA helped him find an audiologist who specializes in tinnitus. I still hear the sound, he says, but now that I've learned to manage it, it doesn't bother me like it used to. And one more thing from AARP, the magazine. Up front, what I know now, Terry Bradshaw, the NFL Hall of Famer on the power of fun, football, and faith. Barefoot in Louisiana. Me as a child, rambunctious, never still, always in trouble, never could keep my clothes clean, didn't even like to wear clothes, used to take my shoes and socks off on the way to school and hide them in a culvert so I could go barefooted. Not a good student, didn't like school, and then, of course, later on in life, you find out that you're an ADD guy, so that helps explain why you weren't a good student. Praying and fishing. My dad worked 6 days a week, and on Wednesdays and Sundays, we were in church. I had that foundation. I fished with my father, but he never played catch with the football. If I screwed up in life, I can't blame it on anybody else because I grew up with a lot of love and a lot of fun. The early lure of sports. I got my first football when I was 11, and I was hooked. I wasn't a good athlete at first, but I worked hard to be good at it. I remember figuring out how to snap my wrist and make a spiral and then throwing the ball into a snowbank, we were living in Iowa then, over and over because I didn't have anybody to play catch with. And I said, oh my God, and went and begged my mother to come with me. That was it. Coaches as mentors. By far the greatest impact on my career was Mickey Slaughter at Louisiana Tech. I wasn't highly recruited from high school, but my body really caught up my junior year in college. Mickey was the one who always said, you're going to be the best, just pumping me. Winning, losing, learning. We won 4 Super Bowls in 6 years with the Steelers and had many wonderful moments, but you also have to learn to handle the booing and 4 interceptions and the critics on your ass. Learning that helped me through the other tough times in my life. Life in the broadcast booth. Fox put me into the pregame show in 1994, and away we went. It's a team sport. It's not about me. It's about all 5 of us believing in the same thing, striving to be the very best. Jealousy is set aside. We all support one another. We care about each other as people. We know each other's families. I'm really proud of that show. NFL sports analyst Terry Bradshaw won 4 Super Bowls as the quarterback of the Pittsburgh Steelers. Thank you for listening to Senior Living on Al Radio. You can listen to Al Radio on our specially tuned radio or by streaming on your computer or smartphone. You may also listen at your convenience on our podcast page at www.alradio.org. This program will be replayed after 9 this evening.